You ever wonder how preachers, ministers come up with sermon titles? You ever wonder that? I want you to know that today I'm preaching to the choir, okay? I want you to know that today is something that I have really been wrestling with for the last 6 months or so. Back in July, I ended up in Dr. Bill's office, and he sent me over to the hospital for a stress test. And Steve and I had a long conversation about that because I did not enjoy it. I didn't like the fact or even the thought that he thought that I needed to do that. So the last 6 months is where this lesson comes from today. And I want you to know that I thought about wearing steel-toed shoes because it's my own toes that I'm stepping on. But I have a feeling, just a small inkling, that it relates to some of you as well. I want to start by asking a series of questions, and feel free to raise your hand if they apply, okay? Do you ever find yourself driving faster than you should, trying to get somewhere you're going because you're late? That you've left this place early to get to this place late so you can fit everything in? Anybody there with me? Okay, just wanting to make sure. Anybody else that you're just so exhausted at the end of the day because as hard as you try, you never can complete all the things on your to-do list? Never does my Franklin planner get all checked off for the day. Used to. It does now. What about, do you ever feel so overwhelmed with the things and the people and the roles that you committed to that if one more person asks you to do something, you feel like you're going to explode because you can't say no? Anybody there? Is anybody else in a place where their life just is so chaotic and it seems like there's no order to it that the day and tomorrow and next week and next month and even this whole year, it becomes about survival, not about enjoying life? Anybody there? Yeah. We live in a life where it seems like there is room for everything and everybody except for me. So I've been on a quest for the last 6 months of making room for me. What does living like this do for us, folks? It drives me absolute crazy. It does. Absolutely crazy. Now, for me, it's not a short trip or a long trip anyway, but it does. It drives me absolute crazy to live a life like that. For others, it drives them to the point where they go see a counselor. And I get to sit in a chair across from a few feet away from a couch where I get to watch God do so many amazing things as I counsel folks. They come and they say, Gary, my life is just, I'm worn to a frazzle. It seems like I can never catch up. It seems like I can never do enough. It seems like I just go from day to day to day. And my life feels like it's in a tailspin. They tell me that the relationship with their kids is not where it needs to be, nor they want it to be. It seems like the relationship with their spouse, they have to work extra hard with it. And I want to, hey, my wife had to work extra hard with me for a long time. It seems like work gets more and more demanding because we take on more and more things. And quite honestly, people will just tell me, I feel like I'm at the end of my rope. And there's not enough slack to tie a knot. Anybody there? Anybody ever been there? For some, it puts them in a life that's played out from crisis to crisis. Today is a crisis, and I know tomorrow's going to be a crisis because today was, and so was yesterday and the day before. My life is nothing but a series of crises. We live a life where we feel shorted. We live a life where we feel like we're missing out on something. We live a life where there's no hope of catching up. And I want to tell you, folks, I got tired of doing that. I got tired of living that life because as I sat in the office with Dr. Beals, I saw where it was sending me. And he can fuss at you pretty good. If you hear anything else nothing else that I say today, I want you to hear this. I want you to hear this. God did not intend for us to live life this way. I had a sweet old sister whisper that in my ear. God didn't intend for you to live that way. And that has been resonating in my mind for the last 6 months. So what makes us go at such a fast pace? What makes us take life on like this? Is it because we think, well, there's always tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow. You know, tomorrow. I'll finish my list tomorrow, so I'll add more on to it today. Well, guess what? Tomorrow never comes. It's always today. Is it because of fear? Is it because of fear? If I don't do this, this won't happen. Well, if I don't go here, this won't happen. Well, if I don't do this, I can't have this. Do we fear that life is just going to pass us by somehow? Do we fear that we're not going to move up that career ladder if we don't do this? And what happens? What happens is that we fail to see that our fear in investing in things that don't matter, it drags us away from the things that matter the most. When I do pre-marriage work, I use the Prepare Enrich assessment. And in this Prepare Enrich assessment, there's one particular session where I have them fill out a personal stress profile. Yes, it is. It's as scary as it sounds. It covers major areas of an individual's life and a couple's life. It covers work, personal, marriage, home, and family. And it lists all different tasks in those areas. Like with work, it asks, how much time do I spend commuting to work a week? How much time do I spend at work a week? How much time do I spend bringing work home with me a week? For personal, it asks questions. How much time do I give to my hobbies that I enjoy? If it's woodworking or biking or swimming or hiking, whatever. How much time do I watch TV? How much time do I surf the internet? And it goes through each of those major categories of life, and it asks that question, how much time do I give this? Without fail, when they write that down, I see this look on their face of, there's not enough time. I'm not spending my time where I need to. So the next question it asks, what's your goal? And we get to spend some time about, okay, you know, you're spending 23 hours a week on the computer or TV. You think that's an imbalance, right? So where can we move that and put it to a place that will make you feel better about it? So we go through that. And then the last question it asks, how are you going to reach your goal? But without exception, I've never had an individual or a couple come out of that first question feeling like, yeah, my life's pretty balanced. Life is good. I like where I am. Because we get caught up on this crazy train of life. I want to tell you something. It's not healthy. It's not good. And most importantly, it's not godly. Remember, God did not intend for us to live a life like that. This fast-paced life robs us of our focus. We can only spin so many plates at a time. You know, the plate spinner at the circus. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, goes down the line. You know, 13, 14, 15. Well, guess what? In life, when we reach over for another plate and we put it on the stick and we start spinning, guess what? It takes focus and it takes energy. And it has to come from somewhere. We can't go to the energy store and buy more. We only have so much that we can pour out. So when we lift that last plate and we're spinning it, where are we going to pull it from? Work? Children? Family? Myself? Church? My relationship with God? Where is it coming from? Because it has to come from somewhere. As good as we think we are at spinning plates, we can only spin so many plates. Take your Bibles and turn over to John, the 10th chapter. John, the 10th chapter. There's an idea about what life is supposed to look like. John, the 10th chapter, I want to start in verse 7. John chapter 10, verse 7. And Jesus therefore said to them again, "Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters through me, he shall be saved and shall go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they might have life and have it abundantly." This crazy pace that we try to do life at does not reflect the type of life that God calls us to nor desires for us to have. What does an abundant life look like? Now, it's not just an abundant life with things. I think we've got that one down pretty good. But what does it look like to have an abundant life in your time? What does it look like to have an abundant life in just your emotional well-being? What does it look like to have an abundant life when it comes to your physical well-being? Trust me, it's not on a treadmill at the hospital. What does it look like to have an abundant life spiritually? Abundant living isn't about achieving. It's not about arriving. It is about sustaining. It is about sustaining a pace of life that allows us to walk as God calls us to walk. Matthew 6, 33 and 34. You know the song, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Alleluia, alleluia." That, brothers and sisters, is a path to abundant living. God created something to help us. God created something that helps us walk in a pace of life that allows us to have an abundant life. Turn over to Mark, the second chapter. Mark, the second chapter. This thing that God created for us to help us to have an abundant life is called Sabbath. Mark, the second chapter, starting in verse 23. "And it came about that he was passing through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and the disciples began to make their way along while picking the heads of grain. And the Pharisees were saying to them, 'See here, why are they doing what is not lawful while they're on the Sabbath?' And he said to them, 'Have you never read that David did when he was in need and became hungry, he and his companions? How he entered the house of God in the time of Abiathar, the high priest, and ate the consecrated bread, which is not lawful for anyone to eat except the high priest. And he gave it to also those who were with him. And he was saying to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Consequently, the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath." The Sabbath. It's not about keeping rules. It's not about doing specific things. It's about recognizing God as God and seeing what He desires for us. The Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. We have a tendency to lose sight of time. It's as if we think we can control time as well as we do everything else in our life. We control, or at least we try to control, all the fast-paced things in our lives. including time. Maybe the question that I needed to ask, maybe the question that I need to ask myself as I look into the mirror, can I trust God enough to have a Sabbath mindset? Can I trust God to be God? Can I? After all, it's His. He created it. The time that I try to organize and spend, it's His. He created it. Can I trust God with it more than I trust myself? Turn over to Psalm the 90th chapter. Psalm the 90th chapter. This is an interesting psalm of Moses. I think in this, Moses helps me to grasp what Sabbath is, what Sabbath does, what that mindset actually is. Psalm 90, verse 1 and 2. Lord, Thou hast been our dwelling place in all generations. Before the mountains were born, or Thou didst give birth to the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, Thou art God. Moses is recognizing God for who He is. From the very beginning to right now, God was God, is God, and will be God. No doubt about it. That's the first step in having this Sabbath mindset. Verse 3, Thou dost turn man back to dust and dost say, Return, O children of men, for 1,000 years in Thy sight are like a yesterday when it passes by, or as a watch in the night. Thou hast swept them away like a flood. They fall asleep. In the morning they are like grass which sprouts anew. In the morning it flourishes and sprouts anew. Toward evening it fades and withers away. For we have been consumed by Thine anger, and Thy wrath we have been dismayed. Thou hast placed our iniquities before Thee, our secret sins as the light of Thy presence. For all our days have declined in Thy fury. We have finished our years like a sigh. For as the days of our life, they contain 70 years. Or due to strength, 80 years. Yet their pride is but labor and sorrow. For soon it is gone, and we fly away. Moses is understanding this concept of time, how short it is, and how little control of it we actually have. I really like verse 12 when Moses says, So teach us to number our days, that we may present to Thee a heart of wisdom. I like to define wisdom as this, knowledge in action. Wisdom. Knowledge in action. Teach us. Teach us to number our days. Teach us to pay attention to the time that we have. May we present to Thee a heart of wisdom. God, can I get it? Can I understand it? Because that's the key to living this life that He desires for us. Not just a life, but an abundant life. He finishes up, Do return, O Lord, how long will it be, and be sorry for Thy servants. O satisfy us in the morning with Thy loving kindness, that we may sing for joy and be glad of all our days. Make us glad according to the days Thou hast afflicted us, and the years we have seen evil. Let Thy work appear to Thy servants, and Thy majesty to their children, and let the favor of the Lord our God be upon us, and do confirm for us the work of our hands. Yes, confirm the work of our hands. Isn't it our hands that get us in the trouble to start with? By thinking how many plates that we can spin. If you try to call me on a Sunday, good luck. Sunday is my cell phone Sabbath. I lay it on the dresser and that's where it stays. I got to have a break. For so long, I let it control me. I kept it at my side, and at everybody else's beckoning, I would answer. I've been doing that now for about 8-9 months. You got to try it. It will change your life. It's not about the phone. It's not about the people. It's about recognizing God as God and putting things in their rightful place. Moses understands the Sabbath mindset, and he trusts God to be in control. Moses doesn't feel like he has to do it all on his own, like I was. He was able to trust God in being God and being faithful to Him. The last couple of months, I've heard this name come up, Bonnie Ware. I've heard it like three or four different times. So I got to doing some research. Bonnie Ware is a hospice nurse in Australia. A hospice nurse, you know, they're the special people who get to spend the last few days with somebody as they die. I imagine it's a hard job, surrounded in death all the time. Bonnie recently wrote a book, and in this book, she recounts the top five regrets of the people that she nursed. Top five regrets. I want to share them with you today. Number five, I wish that I had let myself be happier. I wish I had let myself be happier. She says, many did not realize until the end that happiness is a choice. They had stayed stuck in old patterns and old habits. Fear of change had them pretending to others and to themselves that they were content, when deep within, they longed to laugh properly and have silliness in their life again. When you're on your deathbed, what others think of you is a long way from your mind. I wish I'd let myself be happier. Number four regret. I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. Many had become so caught up in their own lives, they had let those golden friendships slip away. There were many deep regrets about not giving friendships the time and effort that they reserve. Remember, relationships take a lot of work. It all comes down to love and relationships in the end. That is all that remains in the final weeks. Love and relationships. I wish I'd stayed in touch with my friends. Number three, this one is tough. I wish I had the courage to express my feelings. Some of us don't have a hard time with that. Some of us have a real hard time with that, doing it in a good way. She writes, many people suppress their feelings in order to keep peace with others. As a result, they settled for a mediocre existence and never became who they were truly capable of becoming. I wish I had the courage to express my feelings. Number two, and a lot of you would probably think this should be number one, I wish I didn't work so hard. I wish I didn't work so hard. She says this came from every male patient she nursed. Every male patient. Brothers, what does that say about us? They miss their children's youth and their partner's companionship. All the men I nursed deeply regretted sending so much of their lives on the treadmill of work existence. I wish I didn't work so hard. That's not saying we shouldn't work hard. So hard. Number one, regret of those dying. I wish I had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. She writes, this was the most common regret of all. When people realize that their life is almost over and look back clearly on it, it's easy to see how many dreams have gone unfulfilled. Most people had not even honored even half of their dreams and had to die knowing. They had to die knowing that it was due to choices they made or didn't make. I wished I had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. It's very important to try and honor at least some of your dreams along the way. I'm going to tell you, as I read through those, and I'm looking at myself over the last 6 months, if I were to die today, I would have some of those same regrets. Because I wasn't living the abundant life that Jesus came for me to live. She writes, life is a choice. It's your life. Choose consciously. Choose wisely. Choose honestly. Choose happiness. This is where I found myself. Do I trust my understanding of an abundant life more than I trust God's giving of an abundant life? Am I choosing a hurried life? And this is what I simply ask myself. Whose life am I living? Whose life am I living? The one that I chose? The one that I choose? Or the one that God chooses for me? So it led me to, where do I need to make room for me? Where do I need to make room for me to have an abundant life as God intended? Where do I need to make room for me to seek first His kingdom and righteousness? Where do I need to make room for me to walk at the pace of life that God desires for me to walk? Where do I need to make room? Remember those plates? The more we pick up, the more I have to take away from others. So I decided, I started taking some plates off the sticks. Because I realized I only had so much energy. I needed to put my wife in her right place. Put my children in their right place. My grandchildren. The people that I minister to. The people that I work with. And this amazing thing happened. As I simplified my life, I have a better understanding of His kingdom and His righteousness. I have a better understanding of an abundant life when it comes to my time, my physical well-being, my emotional well-being. It's a choice. Do you desire the abundant life that Christ came to give us? So my question for you, do you need to make room for me? Not me, but you ask that question. Do I need to make room for me? It starts with just simply stopping, taking a deep breath. To know you're in control of that. I'm just curious. Can we help each other make room? Can we be a people that recognize the importance of making room for me? Can we be a people who recognizes that God did not intend for us to live a life of chaos from crisis to crisis, of driving too fast because I'm leaving early to get there late? Can we be a people that recognize God did not intend for us to live that way? Can we be a people that embraces the moments of God because they are His? Every moment He created, He gives to us as a gift. Back in John 10, we see Jesus as the Good Shepherd. A good shepherd not only protects, He provides. What makes us miss that? What makes us miss this crying out of Moses back in Psalm 90, verse 12, of teach us to number our days that we, that I can gain a heart of wisdom. Teach me to have an abundant life. See, there's only one person that can make room for me. And guess who that is? Me. There's only one person that can make room for me to have an abundant life as God intended. There's only one person that can make room for me to seek first His kingdom. There's only one person that can make room for me to walk the pace that God desires for us. And that's me. When we walk together, it's a whole lot easier. It's easier to hold each other accountable. It's easier to encourage. It's easier to notice those that might be walking at a pace that too much for them. Helps us to see those not walking fast enough if we're a people that enjoy the abundant life of God together. Do you need to make room? That's my challenge to you today. Go home. Stand in front of a mirror. Really look deeply into your life and see how many plates are you spinning. How many do you need to set down so you too can walk in the abundant life that God calls us to? It's infectious. It's contagious. Testimony. Life is a whole lot better that way. Trust me. Do you need to come? If you do, come while we stand and sing.